will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
To the downside of venture capital.
People said, well, don't sweat the small things. Well, I guarantee if you don't sweat the small things, the big things are going to become a mess.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
Don't want to wait until you jump off the cliff to grab a parachute.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host. Rob Artigo here once again, your guest host for this edition of the Tough Things First podcast. I'm a writer and investigator in California. Being invited back, always a pleasure, Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. So good to be back with you again.
Well, it's happened to most of us at one time or another. It can be at a board meeting. It could be in a design strategy session. It can be just a discussion in passing about, you know, where to put cubicles in an office building. That conversation turns into controversy simply because a point we're trying to get across feels like to the other person, at least, that it's a personal attack, and maybe you could even make an enemy out of that person. We know that communication is a two-way street, but how do we make a point with someone, large or small in the course of a conversation, without putting somebody on such a defense that we end up making an enemy out of that person and they shut us off and they don't want to listen to what we have to say?
That's a challenge of making your point without making an enemy. It depends upon how we sharpen our point. You know, I mean, if you're sit there and you're making, as an example, you're whittling on a stick and you keep sharpening that point and you keep pointing at somebody, they're going to think they're your enemy, or they're become your enemy. And so, you know, don't keep sharpening your point. That's one of the things that you need to do when you're making your point, so that you don't create an enemy, is don't sharpen it. Don't make it personal. Don't make it emphatic. Don't make it so that it comes across as being you're harming them, because then they will become your enemy. So the challenge is to make your point without sharpening it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, can we employ techniques that will maybe draw out the point so that the other person feels like they're contributing to your point, so that it doesn't sound like you're telling them something, but that they're, in other words, I mean, can we ask questions instead of making a point or making a direct point and make an end around to our point in order to not directly come at somebody with that, like you said, pointed stick?
That's the key. In other words, keep them involved. Keep asking them, how do you feel about this? Or, you know, what's your feeling on that subject? And do you understand what I'm saying? How can we work together on this? And making it sound like it's a two-way, or that we're a team, as opposed to being you're the enemy. You're the one that's going to get defeated in this. And so, you know, we don't want to bark our point. We want to, in a more of a loving, more of an, in a more a kind way, we want to develop that point so that they don't feel the sharpness of it.
Have you seen in business situations, and maybe in your many years at Micrel, but just simply being in the business sector for as long as you have, seen situations where business relationships have been ruined by one or the other party coming at a situation, maybe with more than one pointed stick on on a few basic business points that shouldn't have been so difficult to get through?
Yeah. For example, in the beginning, starting Micrel, you know, we were talking about how should we dress? In other words, what should be the standard of dress? And with me, I wanted to be more formal. In other words, I wanted everybody to come in a suit and tie and a nice shirt and, you know, nice pressed slacks and so forth, and polished shoes, as you would, because that was the image I wanted to project for the company. But not all the employees saw it that way. They didn't see the way I did about neatly combed hair and neatly shaved face and neatly dressed and groomed was the way that they wanted to be part of a company that, that projected that image. So, I had to soften that a little bit. I had to blunt the stick, but I kept coming dressed that way. I kept, you know, being neatly groomed and clothed and, you know, fresh shirt every day and shoes were polished. And I did it by example. I actually got them to see what that looked like, what the company wanted to look like. And they became, they wanted them to become more like me. So they would, I guess it came in a more slow way. I mean, I was quite young. I was less than 40 in my 30s when I started the company. And, yeah. And so I was, you know, a little bit more aggressive. And so, but you know, I wanted them to feel part of the decision. And so I just set the example, and it worked, because ultimately the employees did finally adopt the image that I wanted to project for the company, and those that didn't see it that way probably ultimately left. But I didn't sharpen the point. I just kept making the point. Does that make it clear?
Sure. When we're communicating, sometimes, and particularly if you're an inexperienced communicator, this idea of backing up a little bit and letting time and circumstances illustrate for your audience, so to speak, whether it's one person or a bunch of people, to illustrate your point rather than continuing to hammer away at something. It seems to me that looking at the situation and saying, does this conversation need to happen like this right now? You know,
well, you know, I have an example. It's in my book. One of my execs had a terrible swearing problem. You know, it just flowed off his tongue. It was a habit he had, and it was just terrible. And so, but I loved the man. I loved him like a brother. And so, you know, I kept saying to him, Bob, you know, we don't use vulgar language here at the company. It's not proper. And he just couldn't break the habit. So I said, hey, you know, wouldn't you like not to use such condescending vulgar language? And he said, yeah. I said, you know, but it's really hard and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, I tell you what, let's come up with a deal here. How about every time you swear that you put a dollar in the employee jar here to do an employee activity? Pretty soon, you know, I had over $300 in that employee kidney jar because he kept putting, but he quit. Pretty soon he got to the point where it wasn't so much the money. He just, it was so difficult for him to walk in and have to put money in the jar that he finally just slowly improved and he stopped swearing. His wife actually told me here not too long ago that one of the best things that's really happened in their marriage and their family is that their father and husband, you know, quit swearing. This really works. And so rather than, you know, sharpening the point and trying to jab him with it and using difficult language with him, I just said, okay, how about to come up with a plan? Every time you swear, and so you're going to get to pay for your indulgence here. If you want to swear, fine, just put some money in the jar. And so he did that for a while. And then finally he just couldn't stand to do that anymore. So he stopped swearing.
That's funny. What do you do in a situation where you've recognized that a point that you made, regardless of the situation, had turned this other person into an enemy of sorts? I mean, and we're not talking about somebody who's, you know, suddenly donning a pith helmet and coming at you with a, you know, bayonet out or something, but somebody who then feels like they're an adversary or they've been put down or they're now on the defensive. If you figured out, if you were sensitive enough to realize what has occurred in the conversation or at the end of the conversation, how do you then try to reverse it and get that person back on your team?
Well, the first thing you have to do is recognize that you've done that. You know, you might say, wow, I didn't realize I'd done that or said that, or gee whiz. I mean, you know, it's a situation that actually happened to me at my Crowell, where in a conversation with a young marketing engineer, a female actually, she thought that I was using language condescending, meaning I was talking down to her because she was a female and so forth. And you know, I didn't realize I was doing that. I didn't, for some reason or other, just in comments I made and so forth, made her feel uncomfortable, and not even realizing it until she let me know that this, I was offending her. And so I had to catch myself from knowing that, that certain things that I say and how I say them was, affecting her. And I'm not going to say she was defensive, but maybe she was a little more so than other people, because certain words and certain circumstances just made her feel uncomfortable. I had to watch what I said and how I said it, and I was just more careful in the way I approached her, and then it, things worked out wonderfully. But in the beginning, you got to watch what you say and how you say it, because not everybody's going to take what you say in the same vein. And you know, what's maybe amenable to one person could be not, and to another, depending upon where they're coming from and how they have viewed themselves. And this particular female had a difficult time at home, with her parents, and cause she wanted to be an engineer. She didn't want to be a nurse, as you would. And so her becoming an engineer, was a real goal and achieved by her. And so I didn't know her background. Didn't know that was a sensitive area. And so I just said, treat her more, as I said, more professionally, as you would, and ask for her decisions and her thoughts, as opposed to me telling her about certain things or trying to educate her. She didn't like that I came across more instructive, rather more like a professor, as opposed to more like a coworker. Which I was. I was her boss, actually. Not her boss, but her boss's boss. And so I didn't realize I was being so professor type, you know. I was being or treating her more like a student, and didn't realize it.
Well, I remember in a conversation, and this is when I was a reporter, I was having a conversation with the assistant to a congresswoman in the Bay Area. And I had asked, we were having a conversation, and like I was waiting to have an interview with her boss, and she was telling me what it was that she was doing. And my response was, is that all you're doing, or do you have another responsibility? And I didn't mean it like, is that all you're doing? Like, you're just a person who's doing that and you're worthless otherwise. I did not mean that, but her immediate reaction was as if I had meant that. All I meant was that I meant it sincerely, just like, oh, I mean, do you have a whole bunch of other responsibilities? I thought maybe she might have another title as well. Not that I didn't think what she was doing already was
important.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, you never know what kind of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, baggage somebody has, like this person that you gave the example to about is, you don't know where they came from and the experiences that they had leading up to that conversation. So sometimes when you say something, it's backloaded in their minds that something will, and it'll trigger them. So, I mean, just have to be aware and recognize, I guess, when you see something happening in the course of the conversation, there might be something more to it that you're unaware of.
So that's how we can end this thing, is really to talk about what should we do? And so it's talking up rather than talking down. So when we have a conversation with people, try to talk up, not down. That therefore they won't esteem you as their enemy. So I said, when this example that I had, and you did too, actually with that congressperson, is to talk up to them, not talk down to them.
You can join the conversation at toughthingsfirst.com. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Ray tries to get those messages and read them and respond if he can. And if you have any ideas about topics you'd like to hear on this show, you certainly can put those in there, and Ray will take a look at them, and we'll decide if we want to pitch those questions to Ray right here on the podcast. So follow Ray on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And of course, get the text of Ray's books, The Tough Things First and Zen of Zen. Thanks again, Ray.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Good to be with you.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest-serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.